The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Bonnie Petrie in for David Martin Davies. So a couple of months ago, I was standing in my front yard on the east side, and a guy in a pickup pulled up and said, "You interested in selling that house?" Well, no, but he was certainly interested in buying that house, and that's not an uncommon occurrence in San Antonio. These days, a lot of people in San Antonio are interested in selling. About 3,306 houses were sold last month, and while that's a small drop from June of last year, this market still leans toward sellers. Are you thinking about selling? What are your questions and concerns? We want them. Call us at 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org or at us, as the kids say, on Twitter at @tprsource. And so let's welcome our guests today, experts who can answer your questions if you call or email or tweet. Kim Bragman is a realtor with Phyllis Brown & Company, and she is the chair-elect of the San Antonio Board of Realtors. And Sarah Garish, welcome, is a realtor, that is, with RE/MAX Unlimited, and also a SABOR board member. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So Kim, what is a buyer's market compared to a seller's market? What's a balance? What does that mean?
So that's a great question, Bonnie. So the National Association of Realtors defines the difference between a buyer's market and a seller's market. A neutral market is considered 6 months' supply of inventory. And so anything that's below 6 months' supply of inventory tends to be a seller's market. And then obviously anything above 6 months tends to be a buyer's market.
And so in a practical sense, what does that mean to potential buyers and sellers?
Well, if you just look at the basic supply and demand principle, it means that when there's fewer properties available and more demand, prices are going to tend to be higher. Conversely, if there's more properties and fewer buyers, then the prices tend to come down a bit. So it really comes down to supply and demand.
Okay. So Kim, who should think about, if you hadn't really thought about selling before, who should think about selling in a seller's market? Oh, I'm sorry, Sarah.
Who should be thinking about selling in a seller's market?
Yeah.
Well, I say if you are even considering putting your home up for sale or seller, then now is the time. I would say what you need to do is, you know, consult a realtor, you know, look and see what the compare, because every neighborhood is different, you know, do a comparative market analysis, see what the comps are, and, you know, discuss a strategy in order to put that home up for sale.
Those of us who watch HGTV a lot know what comps are, but maybe not everybody does. What's a comp?
A comp is a comparable. So when you're a realtor and you are discussing price strategy, what we're going to do is we look in the multiple listing service and look for homes similar to yours, and we call those comparables or comps.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about a seller's market versus a buyer's market, you think obviously it's better for one than the other. So what does that mean for potential buyers, Kim?
Meaning?
If it's a seller's market, is it bad for buyers?
No, not necessarily, because we always like to say that real estate is like the weather, that it's local. And so you really have to look at your local community, your local neighborhood, and make the determination with your realtor. Again, as Sarah said, what the best strategy is. So you may be looking in a neighborhood that has sufficient supply, and so it balances out the supply and demand quotient, or you may be looking in a very competitive neighborhood, in which case you have to be a little bit more aggressive when it comes to making offers. So again, it really just depends on where you're looking.
So if you listening right now are thinking about selling your house or are selling your house or want to know how perhaps to decide whether or not to sell your house, give us a call, 210-614-8980. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org or add us on Twitter at @tprsource. Now, Sarah, you heard my story at the beginning about the guy driving up and saying, both of you work in downtown. He drove up and said, "Hey, you want to sell your house?" Is that a common occurrence these days?
I feel like in today's market, it is very common. I think that the best thing to do is, like, if you are even considering, is to, you know, consult a realtor to see what fair market value is. There are a lot of, you know, investors out there, you know, trying to, you know, make the best deal. But you as a seller want to be informed and try to make the best decision for you. So that is very common for investors or other people to, you know, to knock on that door.
Is it a good idea to even consider that when just some random person comes along, or should you just disregard it?
I think that if you're a serious seller, it's important to consider all the options and do the research and kind of see what is the best bet. I mean, everybody has you know, specific goals when they're trying to sell a house. Are they trying to sell in the shortest amount of time? Are they trying to net the most amount of money? Or, you know, what is the objective? And I think it's important just to kind of do that research.
Okay. So, Kim, I've also heard in downtown neighborhoods that people get mailers and all that kind of stuff, that people are being constantly approached about selling their house. How do you evaluate those types of things?
You mean the individual seller?
Sure.
How do they evaluate?
Yeah.
Wow. Again, going back to what Sarah said, we feel very strongly that you should contact a realtor, because unless you as an individual are in the business of buying and selling real estate, it's just like any career. If you're not in that career, it may seem very easy on the outside.
Right.
But when you actually get into the business of real estate, it's very complex. I mean, we're talking about contracts, legal contracts to buy and sell a home, a property.
Right.
And so would you want to handle that on your own, or would you want to have that handled by somebody who's experienced in that field?
If somebody comes up to you in that way, how do you determine whether or not they are legit? You know, what sort of bona fides do you look for?
Well, and see, that's the difference between handling it on your own or working with a realtor, because the realtor, first of all, as Sarah said, is going to understand what the market is like for your property and make sure that it's priced correctly. And then they're going to have the experience to have gone through the contract process to know what a qualified buyer is and what they are not. The biggest piece is that you want to make sure that that buyer has gotten a pre-approval letter from a lender so that you know that they have the capacity to purchase. They may have the desire, but not everybody has the capacity. And so knowing that they have spoken to a lender and gotten pre-approved, the lender will have looked at their income, their debts, to determine whether they're credit worthy.
Okay. So have you out there been approached by an individual seller, or do you have any questions at all about selling your home? Call us now, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. And it seems to me, Sarah and Kim, but Sarah in particular, that this happens a lot in downtown neighborhoods more than, you know, neighborhoods surrounding the city. Is that what you've seen?
I would say, you mean as far as like the knocking on doors?
Sure.
So I would say like with the decadent downtown and all the focus of the downtown area, it is getting pretty common. Or it just seems like you start hearing more about those kind of stories. You know, when we talk about realtors sending postcards, you know, that's kind of that's called farming. I mean, that happens throughout the city, but you're going to hear those kind of stories, you know, the neighborhoods closer to downtown.
Okay, so we're going to talk more about all the things you need to know if you are on the edge, thinking maybe I'll sell, maybe I won't sell. That's coming up, and you can join our conversation with your questions. We'll get them answered for you if we can at 210-614-8980. We're on Twitter at @TPRSource and thesource@tpr.org. The Source continues right after this break. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm Bonnie Petrie, in for David Martin Davies. And we're talking about selling your home. It's a seller's market in San Antonio and Bexar County. I read it's maybe softening a little bit. Kim, is that something you'd heard about, that it was a little bit softer last month than it has been?
Well, I would say a tad bit. But again, as we go back to whether it's local, not global. And so it really just depends on what market you're in. There's so many different markets. I mean, there are price ranges that are markets. There are neighborhoods that are markets. There are condominiums versus single family homes versus farm and ranch. So there are so many different markets. You really have to look specifically at those individual markets.
So when you're thinking about selling, sometimes you think about how much to invest first. Michelle is joining us on the phone. What's your question, Michelle?
Yes. My question was, how do you know how much to invest in a home, like as far as like repairs to get it ready?
Ooh, that's a good question.
All right. Hit it, Sarah.
So I would say, because I've seen a lot of homes in a lot of conditions, I would say you really got to sit down with your realtor and see, you know, what is the market for, you know, for the condition of your home. And they can kind of discuss with you what you need to do. And like I said, where I've seen a wide range, you know, what kind of home is this? Is this a home where it's a cash-only situation because of its condition? Is it a situation where we might to do some minor cosmetics and upgrades and we'll see that kind of return based on what the comps are? So that is a real, I mean, it's a case-by-case basis to kind of see, you know, what you should do on a home.
Kim, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I agree completely, because it really just depends on the individual property and what the seller's goals are. Again, are you looking to exit quickly? Mm-hmm. Are you looking to maximize your profit? So it's really case-by-case basis.
All right. We're looking for your questions on selling a house at 210-614-8980. Let's go to Risa, who has a question on researching realtors. Risa?
Hey, am I on?
You are.
Okay, I have a question for you. I'm executor of an estate, and the house was fully owned, but the person was on Texas Medicaid for a couple of years. So how do you find out whether or not realtors have experience in dealing with Medicaid liens? Because they're very subterranean. They don't show up normally. Like, it's not like a traditional mortgage that's attached to the chain on the property down at the courthouse. It's the sort of thing that is really uncovered when they do a title search. And it kind of throws a real wrench into it, because you've got an old house that nobody's been in for anywhere from 1 to 4 years, because they've been in a nursing home, and they end up having $200,000 to $300,000 lien on a property that may not be worth half that.
All right, thank you, Risa. Kim, thoughts?
Yes, absolutely. So, any time that you're choosing a realtor, I would start with by getting recommendations from people that you respect, and then interviewing. A lot of people will interview up to 3 realtors. To get an idea of what their background is. But in speaking specifically to her concern, your realtor, or you as an individual, can get a title search done prior to listing the property. So you don't necessarily have to wait until you're under contract, et cetera, to find that out. So a lot of it is just part of the preparation. It's like preparing your house. Physically, you're also preparing it legally. So, the right realtor who knows those sort of things right. And get a title search done.
Okay, great. I'm going to try and take as many calls as possible. We're going to go to Toby now, who has a question about the market. Toby?
Hi there. How are y'all doing?
Doing well.
Great.
Good. Hey, well, I live in New Braunfels, and I'm kind of sitting on the fence about selling my home here. From what I understand, this is a pretty hot market, so I think the house would sell fairly quickly. But my question is, for me to purchase a new home, I would be paying probably a premium price if I were to do it right away. So for the market to turn, should I wait a year, year and a half? What would be your perspective on that?
So just if I can get clarification, are you saying wait a year to sell your property or wait a year in between? Could you clarify?
Actually, like what I was thinking was sell it now, rent for a while until the market shifts a little, and then look into purchasing.
Well, I mean, anytime there's a shift in the market, it works both ways. So if it's shifting up for you as the seller, it's also shifting up for buyer. And well, there may be some softening in some markets with interest rates being as low as they are. And we're talking historically low rates. I'm seeing under 4%. Again, depending on your credit worthiness, every individual is going to be different. So, I would say that's going to be an individual case-by-case basis, depending on your property and what your desires are. So, again, getting back to hiring the right realtor that can advise you, because that's what realtors are. We're advisors.
Sarah, any additional thoughts?
No, I would just say it's just kind of hard, because I wish we had a crystal ball, but it's hard to predict where exactly we're going to be. What are those prices? What are those market values going to be in, like, say, from a year from now? I think just kind of nationally or and even, like, I've read articles locally, you know, you read that, you know, prices are going to continue to rise. So it's just hard to kind of predict where we are going to be at a year from now. So I think that the best way to kind of judge is use today's prices. Because as far as I know, I don't think I've really read anything about a dramatic shift to really see where a shift in prices is really going to overcome, you know, today's low interest rates.
All right, you're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. San Antonio, a hot market for people selling their houses. What does that mean to you? That's what we're talking about. We've got a question from Paul on Twitter. Should going rates or offers align with property appraisals, or are they different?
Well, it depends on if you're talking about tax appraised value or a separate appraisal done by an appraisal company. Those are two different things. So a tax appraisal, first of all, a tax appraiser never comes inside your property. And so they are not going to know the individual characteristics of your property per se. They take a conglomeration of what's going on in your neighborhood, and then they apply that to the overall values in that neighborhood to determine a tax valuation. An appraiser actually is going to come in and measure the property, look at the individual characteristics of the property, and compare it, just like a realtor would, compare it to sales, comparable sales in the neighborhood to come up with a valuation. So they are two different things entirely.
Okay, so what do you do with that information? So in the end, how do we answer his question? Going rates aligning with property appraisals.
Going interest rates?
Yeah, should going rates or offers align with property appraisals? So if you have an appraisal of a certain figure, is that what you're going to get for it?
If it's a tax appraisal, I would say there is not very much correlation. So remember that Texas is a non-disclosure state. So sales of properties are not recorded at the courthouse. The only place that sales are available is through the MLS system, and that's that information that a realtor has available to them. The tax appraiser doesn't have access because they're not a realtor. They're not in the business of buying and selling real estate. So they are not members of the Board of Realtors. They don't have access to the MLS. So they are completely different.
All right. So you're listening to Kim Bragman there. She's a realtor with Phyllis Browning Company and San Antonio Board of Realtors Chair-Elect. We also have Sarah Garish, a realtor with RE/MAX Unlimited and a SABOR board member here to answer your questions on selling your home. And this sort of brings us to another question from Renee on Twitter or email, I'm not sure, but it doesn't ultimately matter. Are price estimates for homes listed on Zillow, you know, those Zestimates, Sarah, are they accurate?
No, they're not accurate. So I would say that the best course of action to try to find out a true value is to consult the realtor, so they can actually really look at the comps, not look at old comps, because that is something that we look at. You know, you can't compare something that is sold like 2 years ago. It's not considered a comp. It has to be, you know, today's market. I would say if you're I take a lot of phone calls with people who call me with these estimates, and you know, you have to tell them what is going on in their neighborhood right now. So bottom line, they're not accurate.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have a call from Jesse. We were talking about appraisals. Let's talk a little bit more about appraisals. Jesse, what's your question?
Should I hire an appraiser, or will the realtor give me a pretty accurate picture?
Yeah, so a realtor has access to the multiple listing where we see the sales in each of the neighborhoods. So they're going to be able to give you that same estimation of value. And again, it's an opinion of value based upon comparable sales. So you're getting the same information from your realtor as opposed to an appraiser. It's just that an appraiser is required to be used if there's a lender involved. And so when you're looking at pricing your home, the realtor is going to be able to give you that same information.
And I would jump in. If there is a situation where the property is just really unique and you can't find any comps that are nearby, then at that point, then I would recommend to get an appraisal.
All right, let's stick with appraisals and go to Greg. Greg, what's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my phone call. Mm-hmm. I live in a desirable neighborhood and we're considering selling our house. The problem is, I think, is that the comps that we've seen so far and the appraisal, which we're going to be getting soon, is going to be probably below what we could ask for. So the question is, how do you gauge, you know, the desirability, the hotness of a neighborhood versus what you get in terms of appraisal and comps?
Well, the comps should indicate what the how desirable the neighborhood is and how active the neighborhood is. That's the indication, and those are the same numbers that an appraiser is going to use. They're going to look, because they are members of the Board of Realtors. They have access to the MLS, so they have access to what has sold in the neighborhood. So it's going to be very similar in terms of pricing and coming up with a valuation. Ultimately, comes down to the seller's motivation. Are you wanting to sell quickly, in which case you might want to lower your price to make it more desirable? If you feel like, I've got all the time in the world and I'm not really in a hurry, you may be a little bit more aggressive with your pricing. So again, it comes down to what your individual need is.
So what we're talking about what sellers need to know and do, but what are buyers looking for? What is hot right now?
You're talking about like what trends or what?
Yeah, sure. What are people interested in?
I mean, right now it's all about, is this house priced right? And so they want to make sure, is it priced fairly, you know, given the neighborhood? What is the finish out look like? You know, there's a lot of trends. You know, have the kitchens and the bathrooms been updated? There's a lot of things like that that they are looking at. I don't know if you have anything to add on that.
Well, I would add, it's always on a case-by-case basis. So there may be some folks that are really interested in historic homes. They may be folks that are interested in more newer homes, newer neighborhoods that may have community amenities for them. So it really just depends on what a buyer is looking for. We are seeing a lot of interest in downtown, but we are still seeing interest in other areas in the market. So, you know, unfortunately, there's not a blanket answer to that because it's such a large market. The Board of Realtors, we sold 32,000 homes last year. That's a lot of different buyers.
So it's going to be case-by-case basis.
Exactly.
Look at your property, yeah. Talk to your realtor in the end. Mm-hmm. So we are going to take a break. We're going to talk about that iBuyer situation, all the websites out there that will buy your house unseen. That's coming up after the break. We are talking about selling your home. It's a hot market in San Antonio for sellers anyway. Should that push you over the line to sell your home? We're joined by Kim Bragman and Sarah Garish, both experts in real estate. And so we will continue to take your questions after the break. And how do you get your question in? Well, you can call us at 210-614-8980. That's 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. And how else can you get in touch with us? Well, you can do it at Twitter. Tweet at us, as the kids say, at us, at @tprsource. The Source continues right after this break.
Remember the Alamo. But how do we remember it? As the 1836 battle site? As a historic mission? As a cemetery?
This really is a project unlike really any other that you're talking about, a battle site and the mission site that has been around for generations.
The latest on the renovations at the Alamo, next time on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm Bonnie Petrie in for David Martin Davies. Thank you so much for joining us. We're talking about selling your house. It is a seller's market in San Antonio. And how do you decide if it's time for you to sell? And then what do you need to do to actually sell? We're asking all those questions. We have a couple of experts in the room with us, taking your calls and taking your emails and taking your tweets. Kim Bragman is a realtor and the San Antonio Board of Realtors chair-elect, and Sarah Garrett Rush, also a realtor and a SABOR board member. So give us your questions and we'll try to answer them as best we can. And you know, everybody does everything online these days. If I can't do it online, I probably am not going to do it. And that's changing real estate, I think. And Jeremy is joining us on the line with a question or a thought about iBuyers. Jerry?
Well,
Jeremy?
I had a close family. Yes, ma'am. I had a close family friend who used one of those iBuy services through Facebook, and it was a nightmare. Basically, the short version is the house had a two-car garage, and it had been marked down as a three-car garage. They got late into the process, and this company basically said, well, we don't care what the survey says. It was all very clear. It was two-car. We're just going to walk. And it was so late in the process, they just ended up eating the difference in what they got for the house. And I don't think a normal purchaser would have done that.
All right, Jeremy. Well, first of all, before we get into Jeremy's story, which may or may not be common, what is an iBuyer?
So there are several business models out there, but the gist of an iBuyer is that a company will make an offer to a seller and to purchase the home without the seller necessarily going through the process of showing the property, getting it ready. So it's a convenience factor for the seller that they, again, if somebody is in a position where they need to get out of their house quickly, say they're moving to a different city to take a job, it may seem like a great opportunity for them, but there are a lot of pitfalls, just like the caller noted, that they may not get all the information accurate. And so iBuyer programs, just like everything, have pluses and minuses. The big difference is that you don't necessarily have a realtor who is your consultant that is helping you through the process. And they may not be versed in your neighborhood. They may not be versed in the differences, the nuances of one home versus another. So there's a lot of pitfalls. But I'd say probably the biggest thing is that as a buyer or a seller, you really want to know that you've got a consultant, somebody that has your back during this process. Because, you know, I think we're all very familiar with buying and selling items online, especially
sure.
buying. I think
sure.
everybody knows what Amazon is, and mm-hmm. probably everybody has purchased something on Amazon. But we're not buying and selling T-shirts. We're buying and selling probably the largest single investment that a person will have. And do you necessarily want to do that on the internet, or do you want to have a trusted consultant helping you?
Well, it seems to go without saying that if one of you showed up at a house, you'd notice whether it was a two or three car garage, right?
Correct.
So how does an iBuyer like Redfin or Nextdoor or Knock, how do they even determine what they're willing to pay?
Really, it's a conglomeration. It's much like a Zestimate would be. It doesn't work in very specific neighborhoods, historic neighborhoods, high-end neighborhoods. You tend to see them in a certain price range where they're very homogenous neighborhoods, where the houses are very similar. They may have been built by the same builder in the same time frame, similar floor plans, two or three different floor plans. And so they're really just taking the consolidation of that information and applying it towards that particular property. Keep in mind that there's usually a large premium that the seller pays for that convenience.
All right. Kim touched on this. Sarah, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. For whom would an iBuyer be a good idea?
I mean, I think initially it seems like it's a really easy option. You go online, you put some information about your house, and then you get an offer. I think that if you have I think it's important to look at all the options if you have the time. There are costs associated with it, but I would also say that if you were going to go down that option, I mean, I would also consult a realtor to see what they're offering you. Is that a fair price? And then from my personal stories, it's just I've heard that without, you know, a licensed real estate professional or a realtor helping you, that this whole process can get complicated. And I think that that's one of the big things about having a realtor to help you guide it, because it's not an easy process.
So obviously you two have a dog in this hunt, right? You're human live realtors that go to houses and do all that kind of work. And you mentioned, though, that this online process does have a premium. We have a question. What costs are associated with hiring a realtor to sell your home?
So that's negotiable. So there is no set rate. So it really just depends on what the individual and the realtor work out. So there is no set fee. But you also want to take into consideration what is going to make you competitive in the market. So again, pricing your home appropriately and then offering compensation that is competitive as well, because you want to make sure that your house is getting shown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about this earlier in the show about folks knocking on your door, wanting to buy your home that way. Brandy called in and asked, are these people approaching homeowners about buying? Are they making legitimate offers?
I think it just depends on the individual. There's a lot of investors out there who see these seminars about buying houses and think it's an easy process. I think it just depends on the type of investor. I mean, there's no saying if it's actually a legitimate, you know, offer from a seasoned person or just somebody off the streets. I mean, there's really no saying without looking at the qualifications and looking at that process. I mean, I've heard all kinds of horror stories when someone knocks on the door, you know, is it a fair price? You just have to get that, you know, do the research.
All right. So we're taking your calls, 210-614-8980. That's 210-614-8980. You both specialize in downtown property. Mario is on the phone with a question about flipping. Mario.
Ladies, thank you for the great information. A question about the Jefferson area. Has a lot of nice historical homes. But we're getting quite a few flippers that are showing up. And, of course, they do a great job. But all of a sudden, these houses that maybe are worth $160, $170, they're going for $325, $350, $400. And they're just sitting there. I mean, are they overpricing, you know, besides hurting the other people that are living there? Hopefully. Get it?
All right. Thoughts?
So, without seeing individual properties, it's hard to say whether it's overpriced. Usually the indication of it being overpriced is if it's on the market for a long time, because average days on market tend to be about 60 days.
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
Right now. And again, we're in a large market. If you consider that 32,000 single family homes sold last year, that's a big market and that's a big average. And so every neighborhood is different. But if a house is on the market for longer than average, it's a pretty good indication that the house is overpriced for the condition of the property.
Well, you sort of touched on a big issue that I'm sure you both deal with, which is the gentrifying of neighborhoods, which is complicated in many ways. And one of the ways is that you may have these flipped, gentrified houses sitting in neighborhoods that haven't quite gentrified with it for a while, like the one I lived in on the east side. So what considerations does a potential seller have to think about when they live in a neighborhood like that and they're considering selling to somebody who may flip their home? Are there neighborhood considerations and other considerations you would advise them about?
I would say that's a conversation regardless of where it's at. You know, the consideration is what is the condition of your home that you're putting up for sale? And then that can kind of determine where you are on the pricing spectrum.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, every seller has their own motivation for selling. We would like to think that they consider their neighbors and their neighborhood when they're doing that, but it ultimately comes down to their individual needs and desires and motivation behind selling.
What would you advise to somebody who's left, you know, overpriced their house for the neighborhood, and it's just sort of sitting there for months and months and months?
Well, so if you're working with a realtor, they should be advising you, first of all, on the initial pricing based upon comparables in the neighborhood. But markets are fluid, and they change throughout the year. Obviously, second and third quarter during the summer tends to be a more active time of year because people, you know, kids are in school, out of school, and so they tend to do a lot of movement. So markets are fluid throughout the year. And so if you're putting your house on the market in December, you may not get as much activity as you would in, say, April, May, or June. So there are a lot of different factors when you consider pricing a home.
All right, Sarah, how long after a listing should you expect to start to get offers to give you some sort of a sense that your price is a good one?
What I would start is, and you have to have good communication with your realtor, but I would start with, are you getting showings? And what is the feedback on that showing? So that way you can know if you are, you know, priced right accordingly, you know, to the condition and all, what, you know, whatever the neighborhood and et cetera, et cetera. So at that point, if I'm getting numerous showings, then I would kind of let that feedback kind of dictate what our next strategy move is with that seller. I mean, that is a discussion and a strategy on what to do. But I would start with, are you even getting showings? Because I would say you have a problem if there's not even any showings. If you don't have showings, you're probably not going to get any offers.
All right. You are listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. San Antonio is hot for home sellers. Should you sell? How do you decide? And then what do you need to do? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. Or you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. And The Source continues right after this break. You are listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm Bonnie Petrie, in for David Martin Davies. We're talking about this hot market for sellers if you're selling homes and property in San Antonio. We talked in quite a bit of detail a few minutes ago about iBuyers, but Jill has some thoughts about that. Thank you for joining us, Jill. What are your thoughts?
Hi. No, I just wanted to say that my family used an iBuyer. We were offered almost $20,000 more than when we looked at putting it on the market a year before with a realtor. The iBuyer was incredibly accommodating, and it worked out great for us because I have three kids, two under five, and we didn't have to do anything to the house. They took it as is. They took care of all of the flooring and paint changes, and it was the right choice for our family.
And yeah,
I mean, that sounds great. I think one thing to consider is that comps from a year and a half ago are considered old for us. So I would say that'd be one thing to do to consider is research, redo the numbers on the neighborhood, because a year and a half is considered obsolete comps. If I think that's what I understood she was saying.
Yeah,
correct. I would agree with Sarah. 6 months is usually what appraisers and realtors look at for recent sales. And if you can get sooner than that, even better, but definitely nothing older than 6 months.
All right, we've got 13 minutes left, so I'm going to get as many callers on as possible. Yolanda, what's your question?
So I was throwing back a little bit because one of the realtors said that the commission was negotiable. I thought it was pretty set, you know, 3% for the seller, 3% for the realtor, for a total of 6%. Is that different here in Texas, or is this just news to me?
So commissions are negotiable. Our listing agreement has like a blank for the commission, and you fill that in. So that would be something between the realtor and then the seller to negotiate.
Yes, absolutely. It is negotiable. But also you want to take into consideration, are you being competitive when you're offering commission to a buyer's agent? And what are you getting for the commission that is being charged? So what sort of marketing, what sort of support are you getting? You know, a lot of it's you get what you pay for. So if you are offering a lower commission, you may not get as much marketing as you might if you offer a higher commission.
All right. Get your calls in, 210-614-8980. If you're trying to decide whether to sell your house or try to figure out what to do after you've decided to sell your house, Joanne joins us on the phone now. Joanne, what's your question?
Okay, basically, we forget the basics and the fundamental of real estate. A buyer, as realtors, we are supposed to make as much money as possible as we can for the seller. When a seller is told, okay, you can make $30,000, that sounds like a lot of money. When that property is valued at a lot higher rate, as is, in its current condition, but things have changed. So because of that, when someone calls one of these investors and they say, yeah, I'll give you $30,000 for your little 1,000-square-foot home, and $30,000, like I said, sounds like a lot of money. When you have a realtor involved, by law, we're supposed to, or by ethics anyway, we're supposed to go in there and say, well, in its current condition, you can make $70,000. You can sell this. And in 24 hours, you've got four contracts or four offers, you know, offering you $70,000 for that property. And it's still a good buy.
Yeah, I would, just a comment on that. I mean, I've seen a lot of sellers, you know, they come and somebody knocks on the door and they are impressed with an investor promising them, you know, what they think is a large amount of cash. But it's not necessarily always the full market value. And that's what the realtor's job is to do, is to at least advise them. And then to kind of, that way they can have the seller can have the facts and to see, you know, what should they list it at? What should they sell it at?
So to that end, we have an email from Lily who wants to know, she wants to sell a house. And her question is, shall I raise the price of the home to cover my seller's and buyer's realtor agent fees?
It's typically baked into the price.
So there you go. So this is a discussion you have with your realtor when you're deciding on the price. And it's not something you don't decide a price and then go, boop, boop, here's extra money for fees.
Correct.
All right. So is it better, another question from email, is it better to stage a home or to have the property completely empty?
Again, it depends on the home. We typically like to see a property that has some furniture in it because it gives scale and purpose to the rooms. A lot of times if you see pictures of an empty house and empty rooms, you don't really know what the purpose of that room is, and you don't know the scale of that room either. So by staging it, it looks homier, it looks inviting, and it gives you a perspective of what that room is for and what sort of scale there is.
Give us a call with your questions at 210-614-8980. And I had a friend who used to always bake cookies before they showed their house. Are there tricks like that that actually work?
Oh, yeah. You know, you for number one, you just want to do a basic hardcore cleaning of the house. You want the house to smell good. You want that nice curb appeal. You want that yard cut. I mean, those are the basic things that the realtors can kind of advise you, that these are things that, you know, when a buyer comes to your home, that they kind of notice right away.
Yeah. So would you tell?
Bake those cookies.
Bake those cookies. Do it.
Make it as appealing as possible.
Right. Should you take down your old family pictures and all that stuff they say on HGTV about, you know, so your potential buyer can picture themselves in the home?
Exactly. Because you're inviting somebody into a place where you're hoping that they're going to see themselves. So they don't want to see your pictures. It's like going into a hotel room. You know somebody stayed in that hotel room before you, but you don't want to know it.
You don't want to think about bed bugs.
Right.
So if there are issues with a home, are you required to tell potential buyers?
Well, in the state of Texas, sellers, the majority of sellers are required to provide a seller's disclosure by law, by property code. There are some exclusions, but they're a very narrow set of exclusions. So in the general public sense, they are required to complete a seller's disclosure, and there are any number of items that are requirements to be disclosed.
And what are some of examples of that?
If there's been a previous water intrusion into the property, if there's been previous repairs done to the property, like a roof. So it's a now six-page seller's disclosure. It was just amended by the legislature. And so there's additional disclosures that have been added effective September 1st.
I just say, when in doubt, sellers, you know, just disclose.
Yeah. And if you are a buyer and you end up with a house with a problem that was undisclosed, what's your recourse?
I would consult an attorney.
Always do that. All right. We have another caller at 210-614-8980. Don, you are on the air. What's your question?
Hi. Quick question. My house is currently for sale, and other than putting the house on the MLS and all the other websites like Zillow that are connected to the MLS and the occasional open house, what else can my realtor do to market the house?
That's a good question. I would say broker open houses are very effective, where you bring brokers in, agents in from either your agency and or multiple agencies in to see the property, because you really want to get eyes on the property. Want to make sure you've got really good quality photographs, because I think the statistics now show that 95% of buyers start their search process online, and good quality photographs are the key to making sure that you are getting showing. So a good indication of how the house is being marketed is, are you getting showings, just like Sarah said. If you're not getting showings, you're not going to get an offer.
We have a question. What are some of the best practices for negotiating with potential buyers, or is the realtor going to do most of that?
I mean, I would say, you know, you got to, I guess the biggest thing that they're going to try to negotiate is the price. And at that point, you know, you and your realtor would discuss, you know, is this a fair price that they're offering? And you know, where are you, I guess, I'm trying to think what the best way to phrase this. I guess you want to see, you know, if given the other terms, is this going to net you what you're hoping for in this transaction? Is this going to meet your goals? And I think that is probably the best way. So that's kind of like the conversation where the realtor is going to guide you on those negotiations, because every offer means something different. It may be a certain sales price, but there may be other factors in the contract that do affect what you're going to walk away with. And so that's a conversation that with the realtor, in order to discuss, you know, what you're going to counter back at or what you're going to choose to negotiate on.
And it's not always the price.
Yeah,
sometimes you may need to get to your next location quickly, and you may be willing to be a little bit more negotiable on the price in order to get to your next location. So there's so many different terms in an offer. Like Sarah said, it's not always about the price.
So you guys both touched on interest rates earlier and interest on loans, and we had a Fed cut last week. Do you expect, does this add any urgency to selling or buying? Do you expect changes as we move forward, either one of you?
No, I really don't think so at this point, because the Fed rate cut has been anticipated for quite a while. So I think they've been baked into the interest rates for a while now. But again, like Sarah said, there is no crystal ball, so we don't know what the overall economy is going to do. But right now, it is a great time for buyers because of the interest rates. They're so historically low.
All right. Thoughts on that for you, Sarah?
No, I would agree. I mean, with those interest rates, I mean, they're record lows. I mean, it's a great time for buyers to, you know, continue to try to buy.
So thoughts for people that have been calling us and are listening right now. If you're thinking about selling, or maybe you hadn't thought about it, you're just thinking about it right now because the market is hot, we told them. Advice for potential sellers.
Contact a realtor.
Okay.
Ditto.
Yeah. Specifically, maybe Kim or Sarah.
Okay.
And after that, anything else after that?
Get pre-approved by a lender.
There you go. So contact a realtor, get pre-approved by a lender, and then you're good to start the process. Kim Bragman, realtor with Phyllis Brown & Company and the San Antonio Board of Realtors Chair-Elect, and Sarah Garish, realtor with RE/MAX Unlimited and a SABOR board member, with all their great advice about selling your home in San Antonio. You're listening to The Source right here on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Bonnie Petrie, in for David Martin Davies.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.